This is 69 the podcast. I'm Dave Haynes. I was kind of sort of off last week and did not record a new interview, but I have this audio track from a recent online event that's well worth sharing. The pandemic shifted Infocom 2020 from Las Vegas to online last month, and one of many educational sessions held at Infocom Connected was about experiential design. I was the host, and my guest was Michael Schneider of the giant global design firm Gensler. I've known Michael for a few years now, first at ESI Design, and now at the New York City offices of Gensler, where he runs the media architecture team. The session was called Designing Contact-Free Building Experiences, and it was a chat about how the global healthcare crisis is forcing a rethink of using and navigating public and commercial building spaces. Where much of the experience in big buildings lately has been about wow factor, health safety and utility are now in the mix. The session was a video call, with a chat recorded ahead of time, and then there was a live Q&A. About 20 minutes in, you'll hear a tech jump in with a few questions. This podcast is sponsored by ScreenFeed, which makes gorgeous subscription-driven content for digital signage end users and service providers. Check out the company and products at screenfeed.com. I'll have a fresh podcast with transcription next week. Now on to the chat.
Best thing to do to start this off is to explain what Gensler's all about. If you can.
Sure. What Gensler is all about. Of course.
Question.
So Gensler is Gensler is the largest architecture design firm in the world, focused on designing experiences for the built environment. We are located in over 50 locations around the world, and we touch close to 1 billion square feet of space a year that we design for. So we design in kind of all the different verticals that you'd imagine cover the built environment, everything from transportation to workplace to hospitality, retail. And within Gensler, we have the Digital Experience Design Group, a group that I'm part of, that really focuses on digital experiences for the built environment.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, architectural firms are obviously known as bricks and mortar kinds of places. And Gensler added this digital practice. You jumped on about, a year and a half ago, something like that?
Yeah, almost 2 years, yeah.
And I knew you from a previous life where you were doing digital design for commercial property and museums and all kinds of things like that. And at that time, the world was very different than it has been for the last 3 or 4 months. And at that time, there was a lot of discussion, a lot of activity around energizing, activating big commercial spaces, museums, and everything else with digital, with the idea of digital touch points and everything else in there. And now we have this thing going on, which could go on for quite some time. And I wanted to spend some time talking about, have things actually changed, or is it just perception that things have changed?
I would say things have definitely changed. Now, whether that means that the actual needs of the built environment have changed or not, I think that's some nuances that we can dive into. I think that from my perspective, the biggest change, and actually for me the most exciting thing about this, it's a terrible time that we're living through right now, but there's there are some really, really interesting opportunities that are coming out of it, and so things have definitely changed. And I would frame that change up as we're seeing changes that were would have taken 5-8 years to happen in the built environment, happening in 2 months, 3 months. We're seeing, and I frame it like this, like we're seeing people who are open, we're seeing the majority of the population that are open to learning new tools and new behaviors, right? Like that's just the fact that we're doing this is a demonstration of we're adapting and we're taking on a new. And some of these, frankly, aren't new tools. I mean, Zoom has been around for a long time, but I had not been on a video conference until this started. Video conferences has been the promise of existence for decades.
This is my third one today.
Yes. And now I just, you know, sit on rectangles of people's faces all day. But I think it represents the openness to adoption of new tools and new behaviors. And so from my perspective, that is the biggest change and the biggest opportunity. What those new tools and behaviors are, I think it's, you know, it's for us to figure that out. Like that is the exciting point.
Yeah, I'm curious how it manifests itself, because when we first started getting to know each other and chatting about what you were up to, it was about commercial properties doing very big wow factor kinds of installations in the lobbies of buildings as a way to retain tenants and attract new tenants and kind of elevate the visitor experience, so to speak. And that was with big LED walls and all kinds of other technology tools that would kind of get you excited about being there. And now we're in this world where you can't just even walk into a building. There's access controls and everything else. So is this forcing change as well?
I think it definitely will. I think that if anything, built environment, the spaces that we design for actually are going to have a higher standard that they're held to deliver an experience, right? Like if you're going to leave your house and you're going to go to the office, they better make it worth it, right? Like there's better be a good reason for you to go into the office, and hopefully you get more from your workplace so that you don't have to go to 12 different places when you leave your house. You can go to like one or two different places and get a larger engagement with community, culture, like daily needs. If you can get all that by going to work, well, now there's a reason to make that trip into work and to be part of that community. So, you know, we may see, there's going to be a de-densification of workplace, probably. You know, there won't be as many people there for sure. But the role of workplace, if anything, I think is going to get, it will change, but there is almost a bigger responsibility for work to deliver community and connect you to people and do the things that a lot of our immersive design work have been delivering.
How are people who spend their time thinking about design and layering digital into it dealing with the idea that going into a building, particularly a retail environment or a public space of some kind, is kind of like another variation on the TSA screening lines at the airport, where there's going to be thermal scanners, maybe stop-go lights for controlling the amount of people who go in, and you know, only allowing more people in when some other people leave. Everything else, it doesn't seem like the best experience. And how do you get around that, or do you?
I think there's a good example, and I have to figure out which airport it is in the Middle East, but they have an entry experience that uses facial scanning as biometric scanning as for security. But the way they've set it up is they've actually built a beautiful actual aquarium that you walk a tunnel through the aquarium and you look at the fish as they swim by. And of course, since you're looking around at the fish, your face is easily scanned and you pass through effortlessly into the airport, which I think is a great example of how, designing a security experience like that all of a sudden elevates it to a better experience than if you have to look at a bunch of cameras and people standing behind glass windows staring at you.
So it sounds like
there is opportunity.
Yeah, it sounds like some of the magic is to figure out a way to serve the operational needs, the access control needs, but somehow or other still make it feel like something good.
And I think, if you look at how, you know, what people are looking for in this time, you know, they're looking for a level of transparency and access to being able to trust their environment. And so part of this, I think there is going to be actually a real focus on things like digital signage and other communication platforms to be able to deliver that level of transparency to the people in this that are inhabiting that space. Because you have to, it's about building trust. It really mm-hmm. is. And so, and in order to build trust, you need to have clear, transparent communication. And that's, you know, that's what our industry focuses. That's what, you know, you and I are in the industry of communication. And so I think there is going to be a real focus on figuring out how that can reestablish trust of the built environment.
Has the customer conversation changed for you guys, and would it change for integrators, AV integrators as well, where maybe even 6 months ago, it was about, you know, the visual sizzle, the excitement of being here. And now if a customer is going to find the budget to do something, it's got to be quite a bit more pragmatic and not just about, oh my God, that looks amazing.
It depends in the marketplace. I think that we are seeing changes in requests from our clients. I mean, right now we're doing a number of like customer experience centers or executive briefing centers, where it's all about getting, you know, 25 top executives into a small room and like working on stuff together. Mm-hmm. Our clients know that that's probably not happening for at least 6 months and maybe ever again. You may never want to shove 25 top executives into a small room. So we are being asked, okay, what does this look like at least for the next 6 months? And I think it's interesting because, you know, ironically, one of the biggest challenges for the work that we do is you can't communicate the experience through a rendering. Like that's always been a challenge of our teams, is you can't like show a rendering, you can't show a flat image and help someone understand the human experience of it. And so, you know, we have teams of people that are focused on how do we pre-visualize and how do we give our clients an immersive understanding of the dynamic built environment. We're finding that a lot of the work that we've done and the tools that we've built in that space are mapping really nicely into being able to support these, let's call them, they're like mixed reality and mixed locality experiences that are going to be for things like customer experience centers and executive briefing centers. So we're just at the beginning of exploring it. Obviously, the questions are out there. We have a lot of teams internal that are working on understanding what that could look like. But I think that there are a lot of really interesting opportunities there.
I was just on another webinar where we're talking about access control. And one of the key recommendations that the folks who were on the call were telling me that if you're going into this, you need to think beyond the immediate window of this, the immediate circumstances, that if you're going to put technology in, don't think about what it's going to do for you for the next 6 months, but how it might evolve and how you can repurpose it, because maybe a vaccine comes out, maybe social distancing is no longer required or anything else. So how do you sweat this asset? Are you encouraging your clients and your teams to think in terms of, this is the now, but this is how it could evolve, and this is how we can work with this?
I mean, there's definitely the short term. And, you know, since we have a huge, you know, trusted client pool that turns to us when they think about their workplaces. So we're being asked every day, how we get our people back to work? What is the immediate near future look like? And so, you know, I think that there's a number of steps that we've established at Gensler to support that transition. You know, we have a tool where you can take your the floor plan of your office and put it into a you know, scan it, put it into a program that then spits out how you can relay out your office with existing furniture to keep the right distances. We've got packages of signage, you know, returning to work signage that helps you from entrance through the office space and supports the communication there, and some similar digital signage packages. So there is a near term. I think longer term, honestly, I don't think that any of the solutions are different than what we already were working on for 2 years from now. I think it's just coming sooner. You know, we have a whole group that's focused on connected experiences and, you know, the using a data-rich workspace to be able to understand how people are using the space, to provide personalized navigation. I think they're all tools that we saw that were coming. It's just now there's an immediate demand for these type of solutions.
Yeah, I've been blabbering away about the importance of data integration for years now and the ability to visualize data. And you just mentioned that. It strikes me as that's even more important now, particularly because what the rules are this week for how you do things and how you distance and how many people can come in and everything else, that might change. Somebody may be scanned and find out, I've got it, and they've got to shut the building down or clear people out and everything else. Like the need for digital display and for data that can automatically pump stuff out is just heightened in just about any kind of built environment, you'd think.
Yeah, and I mean, the thing that it does start to change is, you know, up until now, the way that our studios approached designing for these immersive experiences was really we created these, you know, solid, custom, kind of isolated immersive experiences, like totally bespoke to that environment. I think that the shift you're going to see is the things that we design, there has to be a level of resiliency or like seamless transition or ability to adapt or agility to adapt to change that needs to be baked into everything we design. Right. Mm-hmm. So that you can't have something that takes 2 months to change or update. You know, everything needs to be part of a larger system so that when there is a change to the needs of the environment, when the programming of the environment needs to change, everything can seamlessly shift to support that.
All right. Thank you, Michael. Great to catch up with you once again. Now we're going to take some live questions.
All right, that concludes our recorded presentation. Now it's your turn. Add or upvote questions using the Q&A window, and I will field the top questions to our presenters. Here's our first question. Experience is prejudiced with preliminary video, yet we know that audio has a far greater effect and influence on us. Any thoughts and ideas on how audio is being used?
Call.
Well, thank you. I appreciate the questions and the attendance. Audio is actually a big part of the practice that Gensler does, and I'd say on almost every project that we work on, we have an audio, either a sound artist or an audio designer. It would take me a while to jump to figure out how to connect that to the touchless work environment, except to say that really audio is a key part of giving feedback cues, and that are, you know, maybe not as conscious feedback cues, but knowing that you successfully accomplished something. So, you know, you walk through, you get scanned, let's say, but it's the beep boop that tells you that you've successfully gotten scanned and now you can move on with your day. So I do think that audio is a key component of what we do. Pixels have a quantifiable value associated. You can buy and sell pixels, and that's why visual is such a major part of our industry. But personally speaking, I feel audio delivers a much more visceral and memorable experience. And so when you can match the audio and the visual together, you have a multimodal or a sensory integrated experience, which is much more responsible to the true built environment. So yes, love audio.
There's a lot of chatter right now and a fair number of vendors who are pushing or presenting ideas around contactless interaction using voice, basically having a Siri or Alexa at a touchscreen instead of using the actual touchscreen. From my perspective, I wonder how well that's going to work in a lot of cases because of ambient noise, accents, everything else. Have you, Michael, tried that in any of the museum experiences?
We haven't in museum. Actually, that's not true. Yes, we have in museum experiences. I'm thinking, I think it's actually, we just did the Museum of the Dog for the American Kennel Club in New York, which is a fantastic museum. But one of the experiences, you're actually training a dog and you're using voice commands to train this dog. And it's it works actually really well. That's a very like defined and limited set of interactions. But I think you will see that happening more and more throughout the space of people using audio cues. You know, the reality is for a lot of these technologies that we're going to look to support both contactless experiences, but also mixed reality or mixed locality experiences, they're all tools that, you know, our teenage kids are totally fluent in, whether it's talking to Alexa or playing, you know, multiplayer online games. These are tools that solve a lot of the challenges that are presented by taking people out of a common space. And mm-hmm. So I do think that we'll see a lot of those things coming into our everyday experience.
Is that part of the kind of the magic, so to speak, that I wonder sometimes with these projects, if it's led by a company that does a lot of visual stuff, does a lot of projection, does a lot of big LED displays or whatever, and maybe they don't think about the audio component. Is it important to think about all the senses when you're doing these things?
Absolutely. And I think, you know, we bring in a lot of staff from the more theatrical spaces, like theater tech spaces, where, you know, you have a set of technical designers that are thinking about lighting and sound. And actually, they're thinking about lighting and sound before they're thinking about visual in a lot of cases, because theater is late to video. And so you do get a much more multi-sensory expertise in that space.
All right, gentlemen, thank you very much. Another question. Do you see us lowering our personal privacy standards for biometric and health safety contact-free spaces? How would that be trustworthy?
Ooh, that's a big topic.
Well, they're swinging for the fences here.
the whole challenge around biometrics, the biggest initial problem is it's so often mislabeled, where face pattern detection is called facial recognition, which is not. They're different animals. You're looking at the unique geometry of a face versus recognizing, oh, that's Dave, that's Marcus, that's Michael, whoever. That's the big initial challenge that they have to overcome. I wonder, in Western societies, particularly in the United States, where you have a lot of people being upset just about the fact that they're being asked to wear a mask to go into Costco, how they're going to deal with biometrics and fever screening and everything else to let you into a building. I can see all kinds of uproar when business really gets back.
Okay. All right, that kind of leads into the next question. What are the contact-free solutions or are considered as front runners for being used and sustainable for long-term interaction?
Hockey sticks.
Yeah, that's only up in the north. You know, I think one of the things, I think clearly people's personal devices are going to become a much bigger part of interacting and controlling the environment. And I think that's I think, an obvious one. And there will be a lot of focus. There already is a lot of focus on figuring out how to leverage that tool, whether it's your mobile phone or whether it's your laptop computer, but using that as an interface for engaging with collaborative workspaces, for controlling your environment, for communicating. And so that's, I think that's a key one. I do think that some version of, you know, voice recognition is going to, or voice control is going to be a big part of the contactless. Biometric as well will be some part of that too. I think those are really the primary ones that that we're seeing growing that I can think of.
Curious about, because you've done so much experience design and so much analysis of how people use a building and use a physical space. There are some vendors out there who are coming up with contactless touch or touchless touch. So you hover your finger over the screen, but you don't physically touch it. And I had a conversation the other day with a vendor about that and just openly said, I wonder if people are going to figure that out. Because if you walk up to a touchscreen, your automatic thought is, I'll touch it. You don't think about it. I'm going to put my index finger within a centimeter of the screen and then I'm going to stop.
Yeah. I mean, it's a really good question. Cause up until now I've always said, no, like you're not going to get people to do crazy gestures to control their environment.
You just did.
Yeah. Yeah. But nothing happened. That being said, this is a moment where people are willing to learn some new behaviors. And so, you know, just like how when they first started touch screens, like pinch and zoom and all those gestures were not natural and they became natural. So I think there is an opportunity for a few, you know, touchless gestures to start to become part of our vocabulary for interacting with space. I mean, even, you know, my Android phone, I can skip to the next song by just, you know, waving my hand in front of it when I'm driving. So there's little things like that that are starting to get into our cultural vocabulary that I think you could see really growing over the next 6 months or so.
All right. I think we have enough time for about one more question. What about simple building navigation? Lots of contact points in elevators, for example.
Michael?
Simple building navigation. I'm trying to interpret the question.
I'll jump in. Certainly there's what I found, generally speaking, as this pandemic has kind of bubbled up, you're seeing a lot more requests around very utilitarian kinds of applications for screens, where instead of the sizzle that we were talking about earlier, it's just like, how do you control people getting in? How do you show them around a building? Like wayfinding has always been a thing for digital signage and in large building campuses. I just think now it's even more so because there may not be a reception desk or a security desk that you can walk up to. They may not want to staff that anymore. Or if they do, there's a plexiglass shield between you and the security guard. So, that's all going to change and it makes signage more important.
And navigation, I mean, the interesting thing is, with the occupancy sensors, with some of the technology that we're putting into these spaces, you can start to use those simple signage points as places to really give clear direction. You know, right now, the elevator banks are full, so use the stairs, go to that other elevator bank, come back in 20 minutes. So I think that there's stuff like that can start to become a key part of how we navigate our spaces. Again, I think a lot of that is going to move on to the mobile devices, because I do think because of the touchless nature of the spaces, people are going to rely more and more on that, just like, you know, we rely on GPS to drive, we're going to start relying on similar tools to navigate our interior spaces as well.
That's it for this week. Thank you to Avixa for providing the video to convert over to this audio track. I'll have a fresh podcast next week and get my sound engineering team back in the game to buff things up. This podcast is sponsored by ScreenFeed. Check their great subscription content out at screenfeed.com. Thanks for listening. I'm Dave Haynes.